think after we came back from the UN climate change conference in Montreal, climate justice has suddenly come to the table, and it's starting to become part of more of the mainstream environmental groups. You know, it's not anywhere near what we'd like it to be, but at this point, you know, we can really see the movement building. And one example is that I've been talking to people at an organization called Global Exchange who are doing an independence from oil campaign. And they've realized that they don't have any part of the justice piece in there. So they have they've been consulting with me about how they can bring affected communities to highlight them and how they can integrate them more wholly into the campaign. But what I like about that is that they're not asking us to do it for them. They're asking for guidance, and they've come up with their own ideas and asking for suggestions. But at the same time, you know, they recognize that this is something they have to do from within. You know, there's a possibility that we might do some trainings with their staff, and then their staff can go on and try to figure out how to fully integrate it integrate climate justice into their campaign.
Mm. And I think that's another important point that you make, is that, you know, there are all these people like, yes, climate justice, and how can we do this in our work? But they also need to realize that we don't have the time to be teaching everybody or giving them specifics of how to do things all the time, because, you know, our job, our number one job is not to teach environmental organizations about climate justice. Our number one job is to empower those communities most affected, and so that's who we need to focus on, you know, in our own work. And so the idea is trying to, like, do them both at the same time and to make it more collaborative so that we can do both. But we also need to have people realize that that's not necessarily our job, you know, or that's not the focus of our job anyway.
Yeah, I certainly learned a lot from that time in Montreal with you too, actually. And it was interesting. Everyone I told that story to was really happy to hear about it, just the way it turned out in the end. At least as far as, you know, like, it was pretty disgusting to, you know, see the leading up to that. I mean, all the stuff that was going on there. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we should get into that. I mean, we're leaving our listeners in the dark about that story, but it's kind of a long one. Do you want to talk about that a little bit, actually? Or do you think...
Well, I'm kind of interested in what your experience was with
yeah.
it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, immediately going... I should preface this to the listeners. Back in November, I went up to this... Youth climate change conference as a precursor to being a part of this United Nations climate change conference in Montreal. And I definitely, like, you know, I was kind of forewarned myself that, you know, not to expect, you know, too much out of this. I figured there's usually these conferences are very liberal, and I don't know, I tend to kind of not feel very satisfied, that kind of thing. And I felt pretty isolated there. And I realized I was happy at the end because I didn't feel nearly as isolated at the end of it as I did at the start. I just didn't really, I don't know, you know what I'm saying, I guess. It was a pretty liberal thing. But, and nonetheless, like, I forget the woman's name who was in that climate justice workshop we went to, and I could just see it, and I could see, you know, her being cut off repeatedly, and people talking about climate justice issues, and so... ignorantly, you know, and suggesting that, you know, poor people of color should get solar panels on their homes so they don't have to work any longer at the oil refinery and all this kind of stuff. And it's just, I mean, just completely unaware of the economic realities of a lot of people. And, and even just in the organization of this conference, you know, you could see, I mean, even when the woman asked, you know, like, get together with someone and, like, talk about your favorite breakfast cereal. Well, I mean, like, most people there don't have breakfast cereals, and what if we can't afford to eat breakfast?
Yeah.
You know, I was astonished at these kind of things, and
what if we don't all like to eat mueslix?
exactly. So there is a lack of awareness, and do you remember that? I forget the woman. She was one of the two women. She was from Los Angeles.
I really don't. Carla.
Oh, Carla. Yeah, yeah. It was Carla who I was the first person I kind of spoke to when she was kind of in this little group workshop and being cut off a lot by various people. And, you know, I had to, like, eventually cut off someone else and be like, you know, like, this, you know, Carla's been being cut off. And, I mean, I made an enemy immediately with the woman, the white woman who I cut off. But, I mean, I was thanked afterwards by Carla, and that led her to be into inviting me to that little kind of planning group the one day when we were trying to interrupt the writing committee from planning that. And I was just really, I felt really at home, and I felt, like, refreshed to even hear people use the word imperialism in a sentence, you know? And it just felt really refreshing. And I was very happy to just kind of, to not play a very active role in that, but just be there as one more body, as a supporter there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I was almost brought to tears when we kind of stood up all as a group in the final reading of this climate change declaration. And it was a very powerful thing. It's a very, very powerful thing, and I do like being a shit disturber as well. I always kind of have, and certainly when things need to be stirred up, and I think things needed to be stirred up there.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just about stirring things up. It was about truly being people being heard, who are being marginalized the entire time. And
mm-hmm.
it was a good opportunity to be a part of something like that, and to just, I mean, I'm not enough around. People who are marginalized, you know, like, it's easy to be, I mean, especially in Guelph, it's a fairly white community, and it's, I mean, I do participate in anti-poverty work and stuff like that, but it was still very refreshing to be overwhelmingly the minority, you know, because of my skin color, and just be around people who have such different life experiences than I'm used to, and I learned a lot from that, so it was great.
That's
some of my interpretation of it.
Yeah, well, my experience there was the youth conference itself was a really good idea, and the intentions and the goals behind it, was really good, which was to bring youth to the Cop Mop in Montreal and make sure that the voice of young people from around the world was heard by the leaders who are making decisions about our future. And that was a great thing. But the kind of barriers we ran into there was that not all youth were being represented, and we needed to make sure that they were. Now, our group, we had a few people from, like, as you mentioned, Carla is a member of our Climate Justice Corps, which is an internship program that we have every summer, and it's now part of the Climate Justice Corps Institute. And we had, like, I don't know, 4 of our past Climate Justice Corps members there or something. Diane and I went as trainers, so we weren't officially supposed to be participating in any of the drafting of the declaration or anything. So we kind of relied on them to handle it. And, you know, they reported back to us. You know, the first day they're like, oh, it's great. You know, people have been talking about climate justice so much, and, like, all of our working groups that we came to draft up to draft the declaration, everyone mentioned climate justice, and so great. And so we're like, all right, you know, cool, great job. The next day we came to visit and do our workshop, and we read the declaration, the first draft, and it didn't have anything in there about any justice aspects of climate change at all. And we're like, what happened? And they were like, we don't know. We don't know what happened. We tried to add it, but we're kind of getting ignored. So what we did, and what you were a part of, is that we pulled together people who we thought felt this way, felt that climate justice was something important to them, but that it wasn't being addressed. We pulled them together and came up with a plan to make sure that it was, which was to go into the writing committee session and tell them this is what we wanted included, which is organizing. That's what we do. And, I mean, that's basically is a little microcosm of what we do all the time. Is like going somewhere and then demanding that our perspective is being heard. And what you witnessed and what happens a lot of time is that people think that that's being disruptive. You know, that's putting out issues where there really isn't any issues, and, you know, it's just bringing the group down, it's being divisive.
Mm-hmm.
That's the response that we get all the time, but, you know, it really isn't. I mean, to me, the people who think that way are kind of just in denial of, like, the way that this world really works,
mm-hmm.
and the way that a lot of things in this world really work. And, you know, having to go in there and demand that everybody's voice is heard equally, that, you know, that's not being divisive. It's trying to be more inclusive of everybody's feelings and wishes and wants. And one of the responses I remember being in the room was, she was like, well, people of color are just like a small minority of this whole group, and we can't just focus on what they want, or something like that. Or she's like, we can't just focus on what a few people want. And I'm like, yeah, but you also need to realize that who you have here at this event isn't inclusive of the people in this world at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it was deemed an international youth summit, but it was 80% Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And even still, we still had 20% of the entire conference was standing up. You know, that's a large proportion.
But it was good. And then what we realized when it happened was that there was a lot of people who felt that same way but didn't really know how to address it and how to change things. And I think the Youth Declaration came out being a lot stronger because of what we did. So
mm-hmm.
I'm proud of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was when we were standing up in the initial, or the last reading, there was a man from Nigeria. I don't know if you remember this, but he was sitting in the back corner, kind of holding his head in his hands, looking down, like shaking his head almost. And I couldn't tell I didn't know what that was, and I don't know if you noticed that or not.
When was that?
It was when we were kind of standing up and people were voicing their concerns in front of the entire group as they're reading the final declaration.
Mm.
And there's just a guy from, and he didn't take part in the committee of, and he wasn't really organizing with all of you. But he was, you know, I just remember noticing him kind of in the back, shaking his head, almost like, I didn't know if he was embarrassed this was happening, if he just like, oh, shut up, or if he was, I don't know, it seemed like he just didn't want it to be happening. And I wonder if you ever encounter that kind of stuff at all.
I don't remember that gentleman or anything.
Yeah, he was kind
of hidden. I do remember some people having that attitude there.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, that is something that we get sometimes is, especially working in our own communities, like on a local level, is, you know, not every person agrees. And
mm-hmm.
so where I'm from Arizona, and I'm from the Navajo Reservation, you know, where a lot of the EJ groups there are working on issues of coal mining and energy issues, trying to, like, stop the fossil fuel industry from coming into our reservation and, you know, taking over, basically.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, a lot of people work for that company or for those industries.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times when we get up and we say, you know, this is what we believe in, we have a lot of our people and people who are older than us shaking their heads at us. But, I mean, that's something that you just have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not everybody is at the same level as you. And I don't want to say level as if it's an upper level or a lower level or anything, but at the same place or at the same mindset as you. And I think that eventually they'll come around. I think that a lot of people want to believe that racism doesn't exist. And, I mean, that happens all the time when you bring up the issue of race. As soon as you say race in a meeting, people are going to be like, oh, my God, now it's going to get crazy. And now everything's just going to blow up in our face. But from the perspective that we come from, you can't work through anything without dealing with the issues of inequality, not just
mm-hmm.
race, but also in terms of money and also in terms of gender.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
You can't make any real change if you don't address this. That's just something that we believe and believe to be true. And, you know, if people from our own community don't necessarily agree with us, you know, that's just something we have to deal with sometimes. There's also such a thing called internalized oppression, in which
mm-hmm.
we ourselves begin to take on the belief that what's happening to us is, or what the circumstances that we're in is our fault, or we just need to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and this is America and everyone's equal or something, you know what I mean? But that's just coming from a different mindset. I know that that ain't true at all.
Yeah. We have only a few more minutes left, and I wonder if there's a few things, we only actually have a few more minutes left, so if you want to say anything in conclusion, or wrap things up at all, that'd be wonderful.
How many minutes did you say?
Well, I guess four.
Okay.
I should say, yeah, it's 5-2 here.
Diana, do you want to?
Well, I was just going to say a little bit more about the new Climate Justice Core Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And this is our new commitment to building a movement on climate justice. So Jahan started to talk about it a little bit when she was mentioning Energy Action and how we're fitting within their campus climate challenge. But just to give a little bit more information, it is a training program that we have established. Traditionally, each year we've had our Climate Justice Corps. Did you talk about that? I can't remember.
No, not really.
Okay. For the past 3 years, we've trained about 10 to 12 youth, ages 18 to 28, over the summer. We train them at the beginning of the summer, and then they go off and do an internship with one of our member organizations. And they kind of become a liaison an expert in climate justice, because we do train them with all the issues that they need to know about environmental justice, climate science, climate policy, and also give them the skills through trainings like media and communications and organizing, really, really getting them prepared to become leaders in environmental justice and climate justice and building a movement from the bottom up instead of the top down. And so this is what we've done for the past 3 years. It's been really successful. 80% of the people who have completed the program have gone on to work in an environmental justice organization or an environmental or social justice organization, have stayed within the movement. Mm-hmm. And what we're planning on doing now this year, and we've already started, is to expand this training program to have a much wider reach. We're planning on training 700 people. So that training that you went to in Montreal, we did a couple of them internationally, is part of that program. So we have 14 different workshops that really utilize popular education as a means for connecting people and local struggles to this bigger issue of climate change and climate justice. So this is a means for really engaging low-income people, people of color, indigenous communities, and for developing leadership skills so that they can go back to their communities and engage their communities and, like I said, build a movement on climate justice.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
So if you want to find out more information, it's at ejcc.org.
Great.
And one more thing I just wanted to say is we've been talking about climate change this whole time, but I just wanted to, and we've kind of been talking about, you know, the issues, but I've always said that I do believe that it's possible for us to work across all these different barriers to work together towards achieving climate justice and also, you know, achieving justice from this whole fossil fuel energy industry, which really is the root cause of all of these problems. You know, we can't just work on this issue of climate change without working on the issue of, you know, stopping these oil companies and these coal companies and these natural gas companies, stopping them from doing what they're doing and really moving our planet towards a more sustainable future.
Yeah. Thank you so much, both of you, for coming on the air with me.
Thank you.
Yeah, much, much appreciated, and great to talk with you again.
Yeah, you too. Be in touch.
For sure. Thanks a lot.
Bye.